Pseudopod episode 124, January 9th, 2009. This week's story, Scavenger, by Jonathan Kuhn. This week's Pseudopod is brought to you by Contagious by Scott Sigler, out now from Crown. After the events of Infected, the hatchlings have established a beachhead. The Earth has a disease, and the only thing worse than the symptoms will be the cure. Hello, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm your host, Alistair, and this week's story comes to us from Jonathan Kuhn. This is Jonathan's first time out of the gate, although your narrator has been around the block a few times. Well, I say a few. Anyway, pace yourself. You're going to need all the energy you can get, because I have a story for you, and I promise you, it's true. Scavenger, by Jonathan Kuhn. No end in sight. He tossed the empty water bottle, now useless. One bottle left. 2 more litres. But in this heat, that wouldn't last long. Maybe if he could pace himself, but he couldn't, because every second he wasted it was growing closer. It moved slowly, awkwardly, jerking itself forward with each step it took. A moderate speed was enough to stay ahead of it, but the man had to rest eventually. And it didn't. Sand slipped under his feet as he scaled the next dune. This one was much steeper than the others, forcing him to rest halfway to the top. Perhaps it, with its one arm and poor coordination, would not be able to climb up. The top could mean safety. But this was only hopeful, foolish thinking. He knew it would find a way up. It would not stop until it had him. He watched it from his perch, still a couple of hundred yards away from him. Its gait was awkward and grating. Its one arm swung carelessly with each step. It was like a human, except that it was the furthest possible thing from a human. It was driven by one unrelenting desire. It wanted him. Screams and explosions were almost a comfort to him, as some sleep to the sounds of ocean waves. He found that he slept more uneasily when things were peaceful. This was the reality of living in a country at war. Upon waking earlier that morning, the absolute chaos right outside his window was a distant second to his concern about the time. He was late. Customers had surely already been angered upon finding his shop locked. They would return the next day, no doubt, loyal as they were, and he would humbly accept their verbal chastising, done, mostly, in jest. But he had already lost money that he very much needed. How could he have forgotten to set the alarm? Then he remembered. There was no need to wake up early this morning. Today was a national holiday, one of the many that he relished for the added sleep, but loathed for the lost income. But now, the events outside troubled him. There should not be this much commotion on a holiday. He rushed to the window and looked out. What he saw could not be real. The water was half gone now. He had tried to restrict himself, but once the cool liquid hit his lips, all rational thinking vanished. When he realized what he was doing, he stopped quickly, coming to his senses as if he had been in a trance. For a moment, he feared that he had been standing there for hours, and he turned, expecting it to be on top of him. But it was still a long ways off, though growing closer, never ceasing, never slowing. He wiped the sweat away from his forehead, brushing away the thoughts of the wasted water. There was nothing to be done about it now. Something in the air caught his eye. Vultures, circling only a few yards above it, surprisingly close considering it was still alive. And then he realized it wasn't still alive. Not in the traditional sense, at least. The sun was also his enemy. The heat drained his energy, but it was not affected. The sun could bake it, but could not slow it down. It knew nothing of thirst. It did hunger, but hunger did not slow it. The hunger was what drove it. Suddenly, one of the vultures dove from the sky, latching onto the exposed meat of its missing arm. It pawed madly at the bird, but this only stirred an attack. The vulture pecked it over and over, tearing at its tender, dying flesh. Though it felt no pain, this intrusion sparked it into a frenzy. A couple of blows scared the bird off for the time being. The man managed to smile at this absurd sight. Yesterday, this would have been the most horrific thing he had ever seen. But a lot had changed since then. He was witnessing a full-scale military attack. That seemed to be the only possible explanation for what was happening below him. One small detail stood out above everything else. The women were not covering their faces. Among the fires, the screams, and the soldiers and insurgents shooting wildly, a missing piece of fabric drew his attention more than any carnage could. Some of their faces were disfigured from recent injury, yet they seemed to be in no pain. They stared blankly ahead as they stalked their prey. Prey. These women were attacking the other people. He knew this from the screams and the blood and the crowds around the victims, but their slow movements made them seem little like attacks, until the biting began. The crowds fell upon their victims and tore into their flesh. He could have stared for days at what he was seeing without the sight becoming any less surreal. He was forced to look away by a bumping at his door. They were outside. The water was gone, and nothing he had seen in the preceding hours of desert wandering gave him any hope that he would find more. He thought about going back. Cutting a wide berth around it would be simple, but even if he found the road again, there was nothing for him there. If he could kill it, he could slow his pace considerably, and if nothing else, he would be able to die in peace. Dying of thirst was better than falling victim to it. He knew he'd never die of thirst with it still alive. It would reach him. But he had no weapons, just his bare hands and the worthless plastic bottle. He unscrewed the cap and dug the bottle through the sand until full. He tightened the cap and tested the weight in his hand. That would work, he thought, and if not, he had his hands. He could strangle it. He could rip its head from its body if necessary. Anything to stop it. All of his remaining energy might be needed to kill it, but then he would be free. He stopped in his tracks, determined to fight. He would save his energy, wait for it to reach him, and then kill it. But then, behind it, hundreds of yards back, he saw movement. Another one. If he got rid of the first one, the second would reach him before the desert did him in. The only escape was to end everything himself, but there was nothing but sand. He must keep going. The door was sturdy enough to keep them out, but after what he had seen, the door was of little comfort. He wanted to be as far away from these things as possible. He ripped the canopy from his bed and yanked off the sheets. The knots he tied were crude, but they would hold. He fastened one end of the makeshift rope around the bedpost. Going to the window, he looked down to make sure none were immediately below him. The space was clear, but he would have to move quickly. He tossed the rope and climbed down, jumping well before he intended. The hard landing hurt his ankles. He ignored the pain, grateful just to be out of the room. Some of them noticed him. The ones without victims turned first, but soon others abandoned their meals in pursuit of fresh meat. They moved slowly but came from all directions. As he was figuring out the best path of escape, the gunshots rang out. He dove to the ground and watched as bullets ripped through them. Most stayed on their feet, continuing their slow shuffle toward him. The few that were knocked to the ground were not slain. They merely began to crawl. There was a lull in the shooting. He jumped to his feet and ran. He scrambled over debris, avoided fires, ignored screams. Now was not the time to be a hero. After a few minutes he arrived, though during the run he hadn't realized where he was headed. Amidst the terror, he had retreaded his daily path. He fumbled for his keys and unlocked the door to his shop, hurrying inside before any of them could get close. He slammed the door and grabbed everything he could find to brace himself safely inside. And when he finally felt satisfied with the barrier between him and those things, he heard something behind him. Total blankness, asleep without dreams. He realized that he was asleep but was unable to wake up. Until it began to bite into his back. He quickly flipped over, ready to fight. Instead of the thing, he saw a vulture staring at him. The bird attacked. He saw the beak in hideous close-up. His hands protected his eyes just in time as the bird bit his fingers. He gave a few good kicks, and the vulture flew away. He watched carefully, anticipating another attack. And in following the flight, he saw that it was upon him. He must have been asleep for a long time in order for it to catch up. A few more steps and it would be on top of him. He scrambled to his feet and ran. Complete exhaustion was the only thing that finally brought him to a stop as he collapsed under the sand. He pulled himself up to his knees but could go no further as he caught his breath. He had put a good amount of distance between himself and it, but his actions had been foolish. Exerting himself to that degree without having any water was asking for trouble. His throat was parched, his back was sore both from the sun and from the bites the vicious bird had induced. Anything for relief, he thought as he climbed to his feet. But relief would not come to him. He would have to search. Hello? A voice called out from behind the counter. The sound of a human's voice shook him, the first one he had heard that day. He slowly rounded the counter. There, on the ground, lay a beautiful brunette woman. American. Fear in her eyes as she thought he might attack her. His eyes were drawn to the blood-spotted bandage on her upper thigh. The gauze was old and ragged, but still held tight. His blank stare made her uneasy. "Do you understand English?" she asked. He only nodded in response. She checked the bandage. The wound was still extremely tender to the touch, but she had to replace the gauze. She carefully unwrapped the soiled material, giving him a good look at the wound. A bullet had done this. She spooled out what was left of the gauze. He knelt down beside her and took over, wrapping with care, obviously knowing what he was doing. She didn't ask how. "How did you get in here?" he asked. He was afraid. "Don't worry, the place is secure," she told him. "I found a way in through the back, but I made sure those things couldn't follow." A thousand questions flooded his mind, but he did not ask them. The chances that she knew the answers were slim. The chances that they mattered were worse. She couldn't get to her feet without his help. Ignoring the front door, they made their way to the back. Peeking through the cracks, they saw them. Most were busy feeding. They saw a military vehicle idling a few yards away, a long distance to cover, but still their best shot. "I know how to use the gun," she told him. Before he even asked, she answered, "No, but they showed me once. I'm a journalist." He laughed to himself as they headed out the door. A journalist and a shopkeeper. They didn't stand a chance. His throat burned with each breath he took. Each step was agonizing. His pace had slowed so that it would catch him soon. The thought of it reaching him and what would happen when it did was the only thing that kept him moving. He topped a dune and looked out ahead. And then he saw the water. The sight gave him renewed energy and he sprinted. He covered a long distance, but he was not tired. He could run like this for miles. The next thing he knew, he was scooping the precious liquid into his hands and drinking. The water had a funny taste, but he didn't let that stop him. He had yet to actually swallow any when he began to retch. Sand mixed with his vomit and some blood poured from his mouth. This brought him back to reality. Seeing a mirage was one thing. He worried that he had gone completely crazy. There was no moisture in his mouth to clear the rest of the sand. The grains scratched his tongue and throat as he kept moving. Their eyes stayed focused on the vehicle, otherwise the fear would have paralyzed them. Because her injury slowed their pace, the things were closing in. The man gave his support as she climbed into the back where the gun was mounted. She took things from there. Rounding the corner to enter the vehicle, he spotted something on the ground near the driver's side door. It was so deformed that he took a moment to realize what it was. The body of a soldier, probably the very one that had been driving before he had been, mostly, eaten. And then it moved. Rolling over so that he could see its face. It was one of them now. It still lived, even with no arms and no legs and intestines spilling out, and he couldn't bring himself to go any closer, so he ran to the other side and climbed in, slamming the door. They were surrounded now. He knew they would have to drive through them, but he made the mistake of looking at them. He knew these people. They were his customers. The old men he had laughed and cavorted with, and the women, again with their faces exposed, unnatural, but still he had known them. The muffled cries of the woman urging him to go went unheeded. He was only vaguely aware of her presence, lost in thought, as he stared at the approaching things. Even when she screamed as one of them latched onto her bleeding wound and tore away part of her thigh, he did not stir. What finally brought him to was the gunfire. She had gotten the gun operational and was mowing down her attackers. He looked back and watched them fall, bullets ripping through them as if they were scarecrows. He did not feel sorry for them. They were no longer things that deserved sorrow. He shifted down and pressed the gas pedal all the way to the floor. He ploughed through them, even aiming for them. His erratic driving nearly threw the woman out of the back. They were out of town before he finally stopped. He heard her dismount from the back. She ripped the door open and yelled furiously, but immediately her expression softened. He was crying. Not in an emotional way. He was barely aware of the fact. "I'm sorry," he said. She wanted to take his hand, to tell him everything was okay, but words of comfort would mean nothing now. "Let me drive," she said, and he gladly obliged. The height was not enough. The boulder had looked much taller from below. Looking back, he saw a peculiar sight. It had stopped. It was on its knees, digging in the sand. And then he realized why. It was eating his filth. The thought of this disgusted him so that he gagged, but there was nothing left to expel. Instead, he held his hand to his dried, broken lips as he dry heaved. He checked the ground again. If he landed in the right way, he thought, he would be free. But the soft sand meant there was no room for error. Land the wrong way, and he would only get a bruise, or break a bone, allowing it to catch him sooner. His mind flashed to a vision of it descending on his paralyzed body, him being forced to lie there and watch as it ate him. This was not the way to freedom. They drove in silence. He doubted she had any idea where she was headed, but he did not ask. She took a turn too sharply and had to apply the brakes with her bad leg, but, strangely, she did not react at all. She responded to his silence. I can hardly feel anything. She was pale and sweating, and then she slumped over. Dead or unconscious, he wasn't sure. Either way, the vehicle was out of control. He grabbed the steering wheel and tried to stay on the road while searching for the brake with his foot. And then the explosion came. Looking up at the large cactus, he knew a few things for certain. Water was inside, and if he did not drink water soon, he could not continue, and it would get him. But he had no way of opening the plant, except his hands. The thin needles dug into his dry skin. The pain was beyond reason. He dug into the green skin, prying the leaf open. The sensitive areas under his fingernails took the most abuse. He cracked the leaf open and scooped out some of the wet, juicy meat. He moved his hand to his mouth, careful not to let the needles hit his eyes. He let the moisture seep onto his tongue and slide down his throat. He took his time and enjoyed every bite, never concerned with it catching him. This was nourishment that he desperately needed. Normally, the explosives weren't out this far, in this desolate of an area, hiding as if trash. He never traversed the roads much, so he never had to worry about them. He took a moment to gather himself and found that he was sitting upside down. In a panic, he unleashed his seatbelt and crashed to the floor. Or the roof, rather. He noticed that much of the driver's side was missing, taken off in the explosion, right where she had been sitting. He scrambled out through the hole, the sharp, twisted metal still hot on his hands. Blood was everywhere. And then he saw her. Her arm was missing, but she was moving. Still alive, he rushed over to her. She got to her feet and turned toward him. She was one of them now. The vehicle was useless, as was the road. Going back the way they had come was pointless, and the road was empty for many miles still. His only chance was to cut across the desert. Supplies littered the ground and he searched for anything useful. He found a couple of water bottles and grabbed them before trekking out into the sand. After running at a good pace until winded, he turned to check on it. It was a long way from him, but it was undeniably following him. He turned and, walking now, continued on his way. Suddenly he felt a strong breeze. For a moment he thought he was dreaming, or already dead. But then, up ahead, he saw something. A valley. He gave a valiant effort at a jog and came to the edge of a cliff. A couple of hundred feet down. Nothing there. Nothing except more rocks and more sand. He wasn't sure how long he stared, but was surprised when he turned and found it on top of him. His pace must have slowed significantly these past few minutes for it to catch him like this. But here he was, at the edge. There was probably a safe path down, maybe even one where it could not follow. But he had no energy for that. And no desire. Now he wanted only one thing, for this to be over. He stepped off the edge to his freedom. When it comes down to it, we are all fundamentally frightened of the same things. Sometimes they're normal, spiders, heights, blood. Sometimes they're abnormal, ghosts, nuclear war, a global outbreak of Ebola, and sometimes they're unfeasibly unlikely but somehow terrify us anyway. Being hurled from a tremendous height by a dead radioactive spider covered in blood and infected with Ebola, for example. Fear is a universal language, one with many dialects but one single universal tongue. When the lights go out, when we hear a noise we could not possibly have heard, when something whispers our name and we stare into the black, featureless eyes of the unknown, we all have the same response. Blind fear. What we do with that response is what defines us. A lot of friends of mine, and indeed a lot of our listeners, it seems, have plans formulated for when the end comes. Note, when, not if. Case in point, last year I went to an attempt to break the Zombie Lurch world record in Leeds. They didn't come close, but it was a good start, and there are very few things more surreal than standing in the centre of a city that is a weird combination of old and new, past and future, and watching 300 to 500 people, and a dog, pretend to be dead. I ran into an old friend there, who also happens to be a regular listener, and he told me his zombie survival plan. It's a pretty good one too. He's not alone either. Another friend of mine has a plan which involves his plate mail collection, halberds, and setting up secure farmland. Our own plan, formulated after watching the 28 days, 28 weeks later double bill, is to meet at the Carver Man Visitor Centre on the Isle of Man. This is for three reasons. The island is both small enough to be overlooked in a global offensive and fairly easily defensible. The image of us staring out across the ocean looking all angsty is kind of cool, and the tea shop there is excellent. There's a wider point here though, and it's this. Fear never really leaves us. It just gets comfy, becomes a house guest. We prepare for the worst and we hope for the best, and the only things that change are what the worst actually is and what we are able to do about it. When I was growing up, it was nuclear war. Now it's terrorism, environmental and economic collapse, and if we are spectacularly unlucky, large spiders covered in blood and Ebola throwing us off buildings. So, if it comes to it, and you happen to get there first, I'll see you on the cliffs by the Coffin Man. If I'm there first, I'll get the teas in. If you arrive first, mine's a Yorkshire. Scott Sigler's Contagious is the sequel to his hit Infected and picks up right where the story left off. Scott excels at twisting, squirming body horror, and here that's cut with a nice vein of quiet, desperate apocalypse. The creatures that grew inside Perry Dorsey and the other luckless victims have grown, have gained access to their homeworld and are busy establishing a beachhead. The counterattack has begun, but we don't know enough, time is running out, and someone from the original novel is going to find out exactly how much worse their life can get. Contagious is available now from Crown Books. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. And Pseudopod isn't surprised because, of course, why would you listen to the kid? No one ever listens to the kid.